Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing.
It's 7 p.m. and I declare the council meeting open. I begin by acknowledging the gun. What do you think the problem is? Everyone in attendance is advised that the audio of this General Council meeting will be recorded and will be made available on the City of Marion website, subject to technology working. Does any elected member have a declaration of interest into any matter on the agenda? And we've got a few, so we'll go around the room. Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, the Hallett Cove confidential item of conflict.
Okay, thanks for letting us know. Who's next? Councillor Byram. Thank you. And Councillor Crossland, same.
The phone tower item.
The phone tower item. Thank you, Councillor Appleby. And Councillor Kerry. Councillor Valesky.
I was just wanting to formally ask governance if there was any conflict of interest for myself in the 270 report for the phone tower, if I can.
Ms. McKenzie.
Through the chair, we don't believe that there's a conflict of interest on that matter. That report is purely based on a process to undertake the Section 270 review at this point.
Probably a fair comment to say that Section 270 reviews are looking at the behaviour of administration. So that wouldn't necessarily cover councillors. It does both. But there's, according to the complaint that was received, where Ms. McKenzie, you're saying that Councillor Valesky is not necessarily wrapped up in that.
So through the chair, the Section 270 review will look at the process and the decision-making processes of the council. So that will cover administration and matters that were reported to council.
I'd like to seek leave that to formally acknowledge involvement in the telecommunication tower Kellett Reserve decision in the course of undertaking my duties as an elected member. There was some wording that had been provided by governance. I was just wondering if that can be included.
I'm not quite following, Councillor. You're seeking leave for something to be recorded?
Yes, please.
That you've raised your potential conflict of interest and received advice that there is no conflict of interest in deliberating upon the Section 270 phone tower matter?
At this point.
At this point.
Yes.
Is leave granted for that to be recorded in the minutes? Yes. There being no objection, that leave is granted. Thank you. Councillor Kerry.
Phone tower and also confidential item GC101115.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll know what that is when we get to it. Very well. I think that covers everything for now. So we proceed seeking a motion to confirm the minutes of the meeting held on 27th October. That's moved. Anyone happy with those minutes? Moved Councillor Pryor, seconded Councillor Pfeiffer. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Adjourned items. Now, perhaps I can just ask Ms. McKenzie, we've got the issue of the Code of Conduct Procedure. We've got three members who are facing Code of Conduct process in one way or another. Is there a conflict of interest in them deliberating upon the general code of conduct itself?
Through the chair, I don't believe so, as it is, again, it's about the process of how those matters will be conducted. I don't think that there's a conflict, though.
Fair enough, and obviously it's something that applies to all members. So on that basis, we'll deal with that matter that commences on page 28 of your agenda. Councillor Hull, to move.
Yeah, I'm happy to move it, but I have a question. Just for the record, in any of this procedure, is there any potential for the LGA to have any role in the code of conduct procedure for this council?
Ms. McKenzie?
Through the chair, the local government panel, which has been established to deal with elected member code of conduct matters, was in the previous procedure, and it has been removed from as a distinct group within this procedure. If elected members wanted to use the panel, then they could choose to refer, as an independent person of council's choice, they could choose to refer it to the panel under that, if by a resolution of council, but it would be at council's decision.
That being the case, Mr. Mayor, I'm happy with the current framework as put forward. I don't want the LGA involved in our affairs. I think that it's important to have a code of conduct process. I think it's really important that we actually also strive to have a process where we don't naturally get guided down this pathway where it causes a whole lot of stress to not only to the elected member but to their family, but also to the finances of the council, because it is an expensive process. So if it appears to be frivolous and vexatious right from the outset, that we actually make a good decision then, rather than go through the motions that we have to go down this pathway because we should or we could. And that's the only provision that I'd like to actually stress. And that's a cultural thing. It's something that's very hard to write into the procedure, but it's a cultural thing about our approach, our general approach. I should know. I should know only too well. And in closing, I would like to stress that in public life, in public office, there are high expectations of us. We do need to be so careful. We need to actually step back at times and not go at things like a bull at a gate and be intemperate or inconsiderate to those around us in our efforts to bring about the reforms that we might want to bring. As tempestuous as it might be. But at the worst end of the scale, we certainly do not want to have examples of corruption that we've seen elsewhere in the country be part of what happens here at Marion. Code of conduct is one tool that is used to actually deter that eventuating. In other words, the code of conduct indicates to all of us that there are consequences. There are consequences to us straying away from what is the expected norms of our activity. So I'm happy to move the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Hull, and I'll take those words of temperance to heart as best I can. I hope we all will. Is that seconded? Councillor Pfeiffer? Did you wish to speak? Anyone opposing or any further questions? Councillor Valesco.
In the past, there may have been perceptions that the code of conduct may not have been used evenly or at the right situation, things like that. I guess as a group, if we can encourage appropriate behaviour through the examples that we set ourselves and watch our own behaviour, for the if there are issues that are quite on the lower scale of slightly inappropriate behaviour, that we call that behaviour and encourage where we see it to cease and do that in a respectful way, but we also have to understand that if once there is a limit to the sorts of behaviours that we would not report, and we do have the responsibility for our residents to, as the items get more serious, that they are addressed appropriately. So I guess I'm saying that, you know, not to crack a walnut with a sledgehammer, but we, you know, we do need to address issues appropriately if required.
Thank you. I understand the point the Councillor's making, and it gives rise to a question I'd like to put to governance, because I noticed that under this code of conduct as it's drafted for us, that the most flippant or outrageous allegation against an elected member goes through the channel of the Chief Executive to the Mayor, and it must come to the full council. Now, earlier in the year, I was under the impression that there were some matters concerning elected members where there was some concern about dubious behaviour or matters on the edge of propriety, perhaps, which were reported to the Mayor and dealt with by the Mayor simply talking the issue through with the elected member. And, of course, I maintain supreme confidence and discretion about those discussions. But I just raise it with governance and ask for advice. Is this something that's been built in for us, or is that an aspect of the code of conduct that is insisted upon by government regulation or suggested by the LGA or whatever, that this particular feature that every matter, how trivial, must come to full council?
Unfortunately, I don't have a copy of the code of conduct with me, but from recollection, it is a requirement that any formal complaint where it's specified as a code of conduct must come before the full council for consideration.
Right, so it in a sense is the same situation that I was dealing with 6 or 9 months ago, whereby staff would come to me with a concern and I would have a discussion with an elected member, could still take place, but that would be in circumstances where no formal complaint has been made.
Yeah, that would be correct.
I mean, I raise these issues openly so that everyone knows, you know, the sort of options that are open. Very well. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. We'll turn then to Youth Advisory Committee update. There is none. Deputations, petitions, committee recommendations and presentations, there are nil. And so we go to corporate reports on page 36, Main South Road, Darlington area. Development plan amendment by the Minister. Councillor Hutchinson. Moved. Is that seconded? Councillor Crossland. Either member or any other member wish to speak? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, just quickly, just to reiterate my concern about bulky white goods as proposed in this DPA. I had it confirmed with me last night, and there are other councils here that who witnessed the debate, that the Flinders University are as equally as opposed to bulky white goods as we are. In fact, to the point where they would actually have to bring into question the viability of their operations in Tonsley. In other words, they could decide to, in a corporate sense, that this is not really the environment we want to be in, and sell up and move. And that really is a troubling a troubling outlook that we should try to avoid. Bulky whitewoods is going to lower the tone of Tonsi to a point where it'll be a shadow of its original concept. So I'll make that point. The other point is that there's a lot of detail in here that we're not aware of. The reference in here about the endeavours of the Kaurna Nation, I would like to know more about that, the detail of that, sooner rather than later. It's a reference in here. It should provoke the question of what does that really mean?
Councillor Hollard, can I just take that as a question to staff now to see if we can get any response? Anyone? Mr. Scholl? Or Mr. Hooper might be able to assist. He's coming forward.
Thank you. Through the chair, all they're flagging at the moment in this correspondence is their intention to review the current policy and look at those particular issues and work with council collaboratively on those particular issues, or work with the councils, because it's more than one council. So in terms of detail, that's what they're actually coming to us before they've actually formulated any policy framework, before they've actually workshopped the issue. And they're just flagging that these are the issues that they want to look at. So we don't have any more detail at the moment, which, in contrast, I guess, to the activity centres DPA, which is the one that had the bulky goods issue at Tonsley, where we were consulted after they'd formulated the policy framework. So, in a way, the lack of detail is a good thing, in my professional opinion, because it flags that they want to work with us on developing that policy detail rather than coming to us with an answer and then seeking our opinion on it.
Thank you. Councillor Hull, any further?
Only to actually highlight to the staff that as soon as there is information available, as soon as that we've got an opportunity to have some dialogue about this, then that would be good. I think, as I said, these dot points in here should provoke us to be paying attention to these items, and that's all I'm saying. So, but the bulky white goods, whilst it's not specifically mentioned here, it is part of the fabric of what's proposed, and it signals a dangerous change of outlook towards the Tonsley project. In fact, it almost signals a sense of desperation by the government that this is not going well, boys. We better offload it. We better get rid of this land and get some quick income. Now, that's going to let down a lot of people. And in terms of what we discussed last night at Mitcham, that project in itself, the connectivity between the university and Tonsley, is an opportunity rather than a hindrance or an obstacle for the government, and I'm not sure whether they're getting that. But last night, I've got to say, Mr. Mayor, congratulations to you and Mayor Spears and to the university for bringing it all together, because if there is a shot to change it, it would have been maybe triggered last night, and that's a good thing.
Thank you. It was indeed a successful special general meeting, commonly called the joint sitting with Mitcham Council last night. And I hope it's done some good, especially hopeful because an advisor from the Minister for Transport at state government level was present to hear our deliberations. In relation to the bulky white goods, I note that when we had a briefing recently from a representative from Renewal SA, that the bulky white goods category was played down and it was said to allow for a smaller scale, perhaps home furnishings type store that might be seen in a small retail precinct to be established at Tonsley. Mr. Hooper, can you comment further on that?
Through the chair, that's what the staff at DipTime have said as well, is that it's intended to be for much smaller uses than the general definition of bulky goods would include, very large footprints of the likes of Bunnings and Masters and people like that. And they're saying that's not their intention. But the policy framework as currently worded in the activity centre's DPA doesn't say only small scale and up to a certain floor area. So if that's the intention, it should probably be worded that way.
Thank you. And that point is indeed incorporated into our proposed submission. So if that be all, I put it to a... Did you wish to speak, Councillor Blesky?
Look, I think if we can at some point in the future have that discussion and really with the appropriate parties to find out actually what's going on and also, I guess, to encourage those that ultimately make the decisions to look beyond temptation to try to get people on the site as opposed to get the people that all fit in with both the government strategy and our strategy, so what we want there. So that's all I have to add.
All right. Oh, Councillor Gard.
Very briefly, Your Worship, just looking at our outgoing draft letter with your signature, do you feel that we should make any particular point about matters discussed last night, even though this is about policy rezoning? Is there a line that we might inject just to add a little bit of perspective on the fact that we have joint council deliberations with it?
Well, it's probably not my view, given that it's very much about planning matters.
Yeah, I understand.
And in relation to the road design issues,
yeah,
we have put our case very, very strongly, much more powerfully even than this proposed letter. So I'd probably let it rest there.
On the basis of a subordinate issue, is what you're saying?
Well, it's a different issue,
right,
and we need to be vigilant and active in relation to both the Tonsley planning issues and the road design issues, but we're handling them in different ways.
Yep. No, I understand. Yep.
I'll put that matter to the vote then. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Thank you. That's carried unanimously. And so we go to page 49 of the agenda, and we're looking at dog bylaws. I beg your pardon? We're looking at page 42 of the agenda, where we're looking at the response to the Planning, Development and Infrastructure Bill. Thank you, staff, for the correction. Councillor Crossland to move. Move as printed. Is that seconded? Seconded, Councillor Byram. Did anyone wish to speak? Councillor Hull?
Only to publicly reiterate that in no way can local government compete with the spectacular failures of the South Australian Government in terms of planning. There's no way we can compete with Gilman or Mount Barker. So if that's what we're up against, well, maybe the South Australian Government is the best place for planning to be.
Thank you, and thank you for not using the word debacle. Very well. Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I'd just like to publicly, I guess, acknowledge Mr Hooper and his team for the work they've done with this. It's been a long process getting through the reforms, and I think that he's done a fantastic job.
Well said, Councillor Pryor. All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, that is carried unanimously. And now we turn to page 49, dealing with a new dogs bylaw. Councillor Hutchinson to move.
Thank you, Worship. You want me to speak now?
Yes, please.
Okay. Members, I'm moving a slightly amended motion to what's printed. I'm moving point one as printed, point two with an allocation of up to $31,250, and removing point three and changing that to funding options be identified and brought back to council within 3 months. So, members, just to clarify the my reasoning for these changes, I first want to commend the staff on their report and their exercise of analysing our parks and reserves. I think they've done a terrific job of identifying those parks that are suitable for off-leash dog exercise and those that aren't. I think a strong degree of common sense has gone into those, with smaller parks being the on-leash areas, particularly where children might be using the facilities there. Secondly, I wanted to state that we do expend an inordinate amount of money on consultation. And I think with this one, it is a fairly... I'm fairly comfortable with the decisions that are made on this proposal, so therefore I'm moving that we don't undertake consultation on changing the signage. Dogs are still allowed in all of these reserves. Some reserves may require a leash. If people are walking their dogs to these reserves, they will require a leash anyway. So they're going to have it on them, and it's their choice of whether they frequent that particular reserve for off-leash training or another one for on-leash. So that's my motion that I'm putting forward. I've got it written here, and I'll bring that forward.
Thank you. While that's happening, do we have a seconder? Councillor Crossland, did you wish to speak? Other speakers? Councillor Hull. Yes, question.
Mr. Mayor, if we can go back to the last meeting where we dealt with a dog off-leash area and compare it to the report we have here tonight, where there's numerous reserves that are actually off-leash, dedicated off-leash, I just have to ask the question again, why do we have to spend so much money on that reserve when now we've got a multitude of reserves that are off-leash? Do we not have the same responsibilities with these reserves as we would with the off-leash dog park down at Hallett Cove? I'm still struggling, Mr. Mayor, to come to grips with the cost of that particular dog park, which was first mooted in the last council, and Councillor Valescu, I think, quite rightly led the charge on the expense back then. But it actually ended up happening. It actually ended up happening, becoming a real expenditure item. I'd like to know why we've got one responsibility there and another responsibility in this report. And for that matter, is the Hazelmere Reserve that has got a pill fence around it, which has worked well for quite a number of years, is that non-complying and in contrast to the standards that we spent a lot of money on at the last meeting? So I'm just asking this general question about how we've got mixed standards and expectations with our management of dog off-leash areas.
Well, I must say it seems to me that this bylaw and Councillor Hutchinson's original motion were about better defining where you can have dogs on or off-leash. In relation to the Reserve Street dog park, we have... Yes. You may leave the meeting at any time. There's no... my ruling would be that there's no conflict of interest with the motion before the chair. If there's some difficulty with subject matter being raised in debate, then the member might wish to leave the meeting, and we could note the reasons for departure in the minutes if need be. Seek Ms. McKenzie's advice on that.
Yes, I would agree with the Mayor in that at the moment this is just about the debate. It was a question raised. He's right in that there's no conflict over the motion before Council, but if members felt that they would like to err on the side of caution and leave, we can certainly record that in the minute.
So my comment is really, or if I may continue, my comment is really just clarifying the central thrust of Councillor Hull's question. And it seems that what we're doing with the Reserve Street Dog Park is choosing a level of service provision which is above other areas. So one could say that Hazelmere Reserve in Glengarry has a level above another area where dogs might run off leash. So we've chosen a couple of sites, perhaps in the ultimate world where money was unlimited, we'd have similar enclosures and segregated areas for all reserves, if that's what the community wanted. But we've just selected a couple of areas where our level of service provision is much higher. So when the Councillor Hull says there's inconsistency, that's true, but I think that's probably the better characterisation of it. Would staff like to add to that?
Through the chair, yeah, and Anna May, that's right, might be able to. In terms of the difference in this report, in terms of identifying areas where dog can be exercised off leash, compared to a dog park, is also the concentration of dogs off leash. So in a dog park, you've got a high concentration of dogs off park. And those standards come into play when you're designing those areas. But Anna may be able to add further.
Mr. Mayor, any of these parks could prove to be very popular once people know that they can actually exercise their dog off leash. We've got no control over numbers. And we have no fences. No fences at all. And that's the irony.
Well, we're probably getting back into matters of debate rather than a question. So perhaps I'll just go to other speakers. We've had a mover and a seconder. A question. Councillor Hull, was there a more specific question? I didn't quite get it from your last remark. I'm sure staff have a lot more information. Please go ahead. Please just identify yourself and go ahead.
Through the chair, just some discussions with Anna White here. There's not much further to add. It's just really the characteristic when you have a dog park. People are attracted there because there is fencing that contains their dogs. It's a different environment where you end up with more concentrated as opposed to a park that someone may be aware of in their area and go down at a time of day where there aren't high levels of concentration of dogs. So that's where the standards come into play, with the experience of when you have an enclosed area for dogs off leash.
Other speakers, Councillor Valescu?
If I can, through the chair, to the mover, I'm just wanting to clarify what we won't have. Is it that we're not going to be consulting? Will we be doing consultation through existing resources? Or will we not have signage, and to what extent won't we have signage? I'd like to clarify that before speaking.
I'll take the liberty of replying to that.
Well, rather than a question, I'll just see if there are any other speakers, because then it can be addressed in closing the debate. So first I'll go to Councillor Pfeiffer. Sorry?
Your Worship.
Councillor Blessing.
It is important that I get that clarification.
Oh, before you make your
before
contribution.
Before I make my contribution.
That's a fair point. Councillor Hutchinson.
Yeah, thank you. The purpose of the motion is that currently dogs already are off the leash in all these reserves, right? So the motion is saying, hey, there are some reserves and parks that we are going to deem on-leash areas for different reasons, size, locality, and it gives people the choice. It's not actually a bylaw change. We're actually changing our, I guess, the rules of play through a motion of council by employing a signage system. I'm suggesting that we could spend $10,000 on consulting the community to end up with very mixed opinions on something that's so broad, and you can see the extensive list of reserves. This is something that I dare say requires a bit of leadership on, and I feel that the council staff have done a tremendous job of identifying those reserves that are logically suited for on-leash areas. So that's and the dog park thing is a different value proposition, which I'll address later.
So the consultation process, Councillor Hutchinson, that you're trying to avoid is something like we had with Reserve Street Dog Park times 100.
Absolutely.
Councillor Gillespie?
Well, my only question was whether we wouldn't have signage. I was under the impression that we wouldn't have signage, but if we are to have signage for the areas where it is to be on leash, I think that's important, because if there is a difference of opinion amongst the users, they can point to the signage with our logo and it can be clarified. I'm just wondering if the mover is happy to consider, in 12 months, we'll reassess or we'll consider any feedback. So that will be an opportunity for people, if they have feelings either way, that it will come back to us after 12 months to see where it's gone. So it's not a formal consultation process, but it is recognising that we may get some feedback, which we may consider whether we tweak it or not, if the mover's happy for that.
Well, Councillor, we're trying to discourage this process of adapting motions once they've already been moved, unless you want to move an amendment, which you're welcome to do. The other alternative with something like that is to simply ask for a staff assurance, if that would be good enough for you, that the matter will be brought back for further discussion in whatever period you choose. So you've got three options, basically. You can either ask the mover to consider your change, you can move an amendment, or you can ask staff to give an assurance about it coming back.
I'm happy to take a point for your worship that council consider revisit this regime in 12 months' time in a report, and I'm sure over that 12 months, staff will collect appropriate feedback.
Does the seconder agree? Do I have leave of the meeting for the mover to so amend? Any objections? If not, then leave is granted, so that becomes part of the motion. Councillor Blesko, it's still with you.
We have, recognising that people may want to provide some feedback, but we're not going ridiculous about it, so I think that's a very positive. I'd like to thank the mover and the seconder for that consideration. I think that makes a big difference, and those involved in all this, I think it's excellent to have that clarity.
Before I turn to Councillor Pfeiffer, just another question for the mover then, clarification. What is the sense of Clause 3, that we're identifying funding options, when Clause 2 says that funds are to be sourced from identified savings?
Well, I was actually removing that on point 2.
I understand. So it really stops at the end of option 2, does it?
It does, but that was in light of recent information about the progress of the last meeting, where this was raised about identified savings, so I'm just providing an option there that council can bring back an alternate, some options for us.
So if the scribe could take note that after option 2 in clause 2, the rest is deleted, that's right. So we're, in effect, we are endorsing in principle, but the allocation of funds will come back to council within 3 months.
Well, I thought that was the most appropriate way to go, given the recent mood of the members.
Oh, entirely correct. I'm just clarifying for everyone's sake. And on that point, just a digression, I have this afternoon asked staff to prepare a couple of standard motions for motions that any elected member might bring to council requiring funding. whether it be urgent or otherwise. So two different motions to cover those two situations. All right, on with the debate. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. I think you know how I operate and that I don't like to catch people out and the like. I don't like surprises. I don't like surprises to be dropped on me. No, but I found an issue. Page 59, I've only found it tonight while I've been sitting here. Page 59, about halfway down, we've got dog on leash and dog off leash on the same site, being Edwardstown Memorial Oval and Edwardstown Velodrome. There's no fence in between the two. It is the same one and the same site, so I'd like some advice as to which way that one's going to be going. And this is the reason why I think we need consultation, frankly. I think it's through consultation that you flesh these things out.
Can I have advice from Anna White? Thanks.
Through the chair. The thinking around that was the centre of the oval was widely used by dog owners to exercise their dogs, but there's been a recognition that the velodrome is used by cyclists, and potentially this is a site where there may be a conflict of interest with dogs going across the velodrome. So our thinking was that the site in the middle would remain off leash, but when crossing the velodrome, the dogs should be on leash, hence the two differences. And when the dog is off leash, it must be under effective control, so it must be able to be called on command, so therefore should not be running onto a velodrome.
Well, that does seem to make sense. What do you think, Councillor Pfeiffer?
Good luck.
Any other speakers? Councillor Hutchinson to close the debate.
Thank you, Your Worship. There's a few different points that were brought up that may have muddied the waters. I think the dog parks are a different value proposition. They're about a gated, secured environment for your dogs to run around in and be social and not run out on the road. I think that's a very different proposition from what we're talking about here. Currently, all our reserves are considered off-leash. I think it's time to try new things. And provide options for our community, as I've mentioned previously. I think the velodrome issue is an important one. The Mike Turter Bikeway is also listed on here. As a user of the Mike Turter Bikeway, I encountered a dog only on the weekend who just was wandering aimlessly across the bikeway, and there are cyclists that use it, you know, potentially doing some serious speed. Luckily, I wasn't. But, look, there are logical places where you don't want a dog off a leash. And I think velodrome's one of those. And if an owner doesn't have effective control, councillor, well, that's the owner's issue, and there are rules and bylaws around that. So I don't see that as an issue. So I commend the motion to you.
All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. Now we go to page 66 of the agenda, if I read it correctly, and we're dealing with our massive annual review of the massive schedule of delegations. If somebody would like to bring this debate to life, over to you. Councillor Hull, question?
Question. It is true, Mr. Mayor, that with the previous administration, I had a view that maybe we needed to reel in some delegations, but things have changed, and maybe I should feel more relaxed. But if the staff could just highlight to us any of the significant changes from the previous delegations, that would probably help us better understand what the consequences are.
Yes, fair question. And who among staff will advise us on that? Ms. McKenzie?
Through the chair, if you refer to page 66 on the cover page, you will notice that the ones that have been noted are the development regulations, the Local Government Act, the Real Property Act, authorisations under the Road Traffic Act, the SA Public Health Regulations and the Supported Residential Facilities Act. These are all, the amendments have been highlighted in the report later on, but in essence, majority of it is the tweaking of the acts, and as the regulations and the legislation change, so there's nothing of real significance that would cause for, I guess, additional attention to be brought by council.
And I ask Ms. McKenzie as well, if something occurs during the year and members think that the delegation might have been too freely dispensed with, we can always bring it back to council and withdraw the delegation, can't we?
Yes, so the delegation can be revoked at any time.
Any other questions, or do I have a mover? Moved Councillor Byrom, seconded Councillor Westwood. Anyone to speak? All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried unanimously. Thank you, members. And now we jump through over the halfway mark of the agenda now to page 328, the appointment of date, time and place of council meetings for next year. And I do note page 329, fourth dot point under the discussion, there's still a reference to the first meeting being on Wednesday, 27th of January, but as I believe was discussed among members at some stage, and in the first dot point of recommendations, the first general council meeting to be held on Tuesday, 19th of January. So the what is in the motion, I believe, reflects what members have been discussing. But having said that, it's up to you, members. The regime that we're talking about has somewhat less council meetings and more forums for discussion and briefing. Over to you. Councillor Hull? Question?
I think it really is important that we are briefed. It assists us with our decision making. It's probably equally as important to actually come to those meetings. But at the same time, I'd like the view of members in terms of the potential to cram council meetings where we're actually pushing too much through in one night, where the potential to never get to questions without notice or motions without notice, the potential to have a greater opportunity to explore the abolishment of elected members' contribution.
Councillor Hull, can I just clarify, are you still asking a question or are you debating the matter?
Well, I'm just asking the question, is it a concern that
order. It's not in place to ask a question to all members. I think that's a matter for debate.
Well,
so,
my colleagues, like, you know, we're all part of this.
That would be a matter that you would raise
obviously,
in debate.
Obviously, it's all done through
order. Do you want to move the motion or not?
I just asked the question.
No, well, the question is out of order in the way that it's framed. You can ask the question if we're debating the issues. It's a good question, but it's not an appropriate question to be asked during the course of proceedings. Okay. We don't have a motion before the chair at the moment. All right, move to Councillor Hutchinson. Any comments? Seconded? Councillor Gard, did you wish to speak?
Only in as much as I would think that common sense could prevail during the course of a year whereby if for any general reason we needed to review configurations of meetings that there would be that option. That's a question.
Well, I think that if we depart from the timetable, it would require a rescission motion, wouldn't it? Ms. McKenzie?
Yes, through the chair, you'd need to amend it by a resolution. Or the other option would be if there was special meetings of council, if we were finding that we couldn't deal with the number of items that were coming through.
Yep. Happy to second.
Well, that partly goes to Councillor Hull's concern. Councillor Hull, you've got the call next if you'd like to go ahead in the debate. Right, well, others to speak? Councillor Crossland? You're moving that the motion be put. Is that seconded? Councillor Westwood, all those in favour? All those against? That's carried by majority. I put the motion, all those in favour? All those against? That's carried by majority. Thank you. We turn to page 331. And I've got a question about this before we proceed, but it's a question to staff, mind you. At some point, we're going to have to come to the conclusion that we don't have a clear majority to, a special majority, to change the code of practice. So this is, I think, Ms. McKenzie, the third time before council. So my suggestion would be that if we don't get it through this time, we'll take it off the agenda. Nobody can say we haven't reviewed our code of practice, that's for sure. But if that's the case, is there any governance issue, Ms. McKenzie?
Through the chair, there's a requirement under the legislation that the code of practice is reviewed every 12 months. If it's council's decision not to amend it, then we'll bring it back for further consideration in 12 months' time.
Well, I think three goes is fair enough, but it's entirely up to council what we do with it. Councillor Velescu.
And whether that's a motion. I'll preface it, I'll be very quick. I opposed it because of a certain reason about being able to do the reports. Would it be appropriate to suspend standing orders to find out what other people, why other people have chosen to oppose this in its current form, to see if we can come to some common ground? Because I do believe that there's some items that people perhaps may want some changes, and just because I have a certain view to not vote for it, maybe getting those out in some freer debate means we can move forward and pass something and we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
So, Councillor Velescu, you're moving a procedural motion to suspend standing orders to allow discussion on the item. Is that seconded? Councillor Westwood, all those in favour? All those against? That's carried unanimously. No, we haven't set a strict time. We'll just get through it. I just note in passing that in the past two meetings when we've dealt with this, that the majorities and minorities have been different councillors. So we've got a multiplicity of issues as far as I can tell. But it seems that, it's good that we've got only one apology for this evening, but can we just deal with the issue and take a straw poll on the issue of elected member verbal reports to council as opposed to a written opportunity. Can I just have a show of hands? Who wants that in and who doesn't? So who wants it in? Raise your hand high. No elbows and tables, thank you.
Yeah.
The opportunity for a verbal report from each member at each council meeting. It's not mandatory, it's an opportunity. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and who feel we don't need or... Sorry, Councillor?
If they're verbal report, it's not through the chair, was that correct? So it's a right, not an opportunity, you can't refuse it?
Yes, when I say an opportunity, I do mean a right. That is currently in the code of practice. The draft amendment cut it out. So that's why there have been amendments floating around to put it back in to the draft. So let's be clear then. If we don't change the code of conduct, or if an amendment to put in the elected member verbal report is carried, then at every council meeting there is a right of each member to verbally report on their business observations, etc. So all those who want that in, please raise your hand again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All those against that notion, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So you've got a narrow number against that. But ironically, people will have counted the numbers that if the minority want to, they can block progress on the passage of the new draft, even though it has some other things we want, and that means we would be left with the current, slightly inadequate code of practice, which would allow that right to persist. So that's a difficult one to consider. Councillor Valescu?
I have a question. Is there an opportunity for some sort of compromise? I guess for me, why I've taken that position, it's not a right or an opportunity that I would think I would take advantage of. I don't think we have taken advantage of it. And I believe in the past it was only in the second meeting of council that we were asked for verbal reports. So, Your Worship, is there a middle ground so people, if they feel they do want to make a brief verbal report, that we can include? So,
Councillor, just bearing in mind that because we've just changed our meeting schedule, sometimes there isn't a second meeting in a month. If you want a compromise, maybe the better way to do it is to put a time limit of whatever you like, 1 minute, 3 minutes, but remember, whatever it is, it's multiplied by 13.
Were to be a 1 minute, have the opportunity for one meet, a 1 minute report once per month at a meeting, then is that something that would be that you would be comfortable with?
Well, look, it would be a slight hassle for staff, but they've got sheets with everyone's names on it. That could easily be recorded, couldn't it? Ms. McKenzie? I'm hearing from Mr. Scholl that would be no problem procedurally. So if everyone's got their 1 minute of gold per month, they can use it any time they wish. So I'll just, before I do anything else, can I just put that proposition again? So if the enshrined right was for 1 minute verbal report per member per month, in addition to any written report they wish to put in, then let's have that vote again. So hands up if you agree. All those against that. We do have a slightly changed, a thin majority instead of a thin minority. Councillor Pryor. Do anything you want, mate, if everyone else agrees with it.
Yeah.
Councillor Hutchinson.
I'll go quarterly. Try quarterly.
It's a compromise. Pure gold. 1 minute a quarter.
Even footy coaches have more than 1 minute a quarter. Councillor
Westwood.
Westwood, sorry, I was looking at her.
Yes, I think 1 minute's a little bit ridiculous. Even I could speak for longer than that. So I'd suggest that people be realistic and make it the 3 minutes. But the 3 minutes once every month is quite reasonable, I think. Surely.
Can I just clarify with staff, what's in the current code of practice? Is there any limitation?
Within the current code of practice, it allows for elected members to make a verbal report at the second council meeting per month for a maximum of 3 minutes.
Councillor Well, I guess if we take that literally, if we didn't change anything else, that would be funny because there wouldn't be a second meeting in half of the months. So that would, you know, kind of make it about five times a year or something. But I take Councillor Westwood's point about 3 minutes. 1 minute is very short, I have to admit. But so there's 3 minutes once, 3 minutes once a month. I must say, when I was just since we're speaking informally, standing order suspended, when I was upset in Parliament about something, the longest I spoke was for 4 hours. I'm quite prepared to do that if you all upset me enough. Councillor Pfeiffer.
I certainly don't want to upset you, Your Worship. Not that I don't like your soothing tones, I must say. Just a question. Is it possible for us to consider the rest of the Code of Conduct and then consider that item separately?
All right. Good idea. Let's just change tack. Are there other issues that are preventing this from being passed by a special majority? Anyone can put up anything they want.
Yes, councils, I have been concerned about football scores from regional clubs and stuff. That used to bother me. It wasn't really, you know, you could read about it in the paper, but, you know, I don't think anybody in this last 12 months has really exploited that time that we've got. And, you know, well, perhaps, but I think it's actually one of our rights that we should be able to do that on occasions where there's something important to convey to the council. The mayor has any opportunity that he or she wants to actually speak and say their bit. And if the mayor did decide to speak for 4 hours, he'd be doing it by himself, because I won't be here. I just think that it's not too much to ask for. If it's bi-monthly, I would even think that that's reasonable. So in other words, we actually expand the time out 50%. I think that could be a way of mitigating this if members thought that was a good idea.
Looking for a way forward, members. Councillor Pfeiffer?
Your Worship, I think it might be worth doing the verbal report element, that one section separately first, and then doing the rest of the code of code of practice, or the other way around.
Well, right. I think we've just demonstrated that even if we say 3 minutes per month per member, that there won't be a special majority either way. So what's happened the last two meetings is, well, actually not the first one. What happened at the last meeting was that the minority blocked, as is their right, and by doing so tactically, they kept the one thing they wanted in terms of the right to speak in these contributions. Councillor Hutchinson?
Thank you, Your Worship. Can we just take two more straw polls just to finalise this, because I think it's the only way forward. We take one at 3 minutes a quarter and one at 3 minutes bi-monthly. Two straw polls, see what the numbers are, and then we move forward.
The reason I raised this and why I feel it's important, why I didn't support that, I think I see it that by opposing this, we are devaluing each other's contributions and we're prejudging the value and the importance of the contributions that other people in our team whom we work with have to contribute. And that's why I've voted against it twice. I think that in the spirit of working together, allowing something, I personally think one opportunity a month, you have some reason. If there's some currency to it, happy for 1 minute just to mention those. But that's why I feel so strongly about it. That's all. So you're looking at 13 minutes max.
Well,
that's my view.
Councillor, I must say I look at the issue fundamentally differently. I don't look at it in terms of evaluating, you know, what people might want to do with it. My issue is rather that the direction of this whole council is towards being more of a board and less of a community focus group. We all have our representative function, every single one of us, and I'm not getting away from that. But when we come into this chamber, the main thing we are here to do is make decisions about all the various things that come to us. So I'd rather use the time for that. And I note that we have had little time through this year for those verbal reports, very little time. But there has been the opportunity all through the year for written reports to be filed. Now, there are one or two councillors, apart from the Mayor, Deputy Mayor, who will put in a report occasionally, but other people don't bother to do it. So all I can say is that's a lost opportunity. But, okay, straw poll. First of all, 3 minutes bi-monthly. Who's in support? 7, 8. All those against that? 4. Yeah. Oh, some. Anyway, we're getting there. All right. Straw poll for 3 minutes. 1/4 per member. Those in favour. Okay, that's not a winner. So what if we put this, if we go back into 3 minutes every second month. So we could do that. Well, I'm just thinking that in most, if you look at on page 330, you've got 2 meetings in February, April, June, August, October. So we could certainly use 5 meetings there. And I guess it would make sense maybe to add December as well. So the second meeting of those, or let's name them February, April, June, August, October, and add the December meeting as well. And let's incorporate that into the motion, and we'll test it on that basis. And it's either in or it's out. We'll just see how we go. So can that be written up? So I can't hear what you're saying at the end there, but well, yeah, we haven't moved yet. But I just want to make sure that you've got the wording for that we're talking about. Has some staff member got the wording?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Then can't move, Councillor Velasco.
Foreshadow. If this doesn't get through, foreshadow the original motion, or.
Yes, before we leave this meeting, let's try and do something.
Okay.
Beg your pardon? Councillor Hutchinson, you said that wasn't appropriate?
No, I just thought it was an option.
I'll just move that motion with the second month.
No, first of all, it's a motion to resume standing orders. Councillor Velescu, thank you. Second, Councillor Pfeiffer. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried unanimously. Now, someone to move? Councillor Velescu. To move with the 6 speaking opportunities a year, as previously. Excuse me, just consulting with staff. It's been brought to my attention from staff that because we've adopted a meeting schedule now till 9:30, we haven't, at this point, adapted the code of practice at meetings, which says still that we'll finish at 10, which when this was drafted was all we were contemplating. So Councillor Velescu, in this motion that you're moving, are you adapting that to 9:30?
It looks like I am.
Well, I think you're going to be a hero if you do. So, that being the case, that's not an amendment. That's the motion as moved. We'll refer to 9:30, not 10 o'clock, as the closing time for the meeting. So that's all being appropriately recorded. We have adopted the start time as 6:30. We don't need any further amendment in the code of practice for that, do we? Yeah. 6:30 to 9:30 will be the standard time for all committee and council meetings, rather than the variation. Okay, members, is that seconded? Councillor Byram, all those in favour? Raise your hand high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. All those against? 1, 2. That is carried by a special majority. Thank you, members. Yeah. After all that, it feels special. Now, we move to page 358. Let's see. This is the submission to the Office of Local Government and the LGA regarding local government elections. Moved, Councillor Velescu.
Thank you. I'm happy to move as is. I think that we've looked at some of the issues. I particularly have my concerns about electronic voting. I think not everyone is at the electronic age. It can be disenfranchising. I'm happy that we look at it as society changes. I guess I personally support that we disclose party memberships and affiliations. Having had myself a party membership at the last election, people asked me about that. I was up front, and it didn't do me any favours. But that's what you have to wear that. But I also think that we need to affiliations is important, because if we're sort of in any political lobby situation, through where our involvement outside of council, I think that needs to be disclosed. I also think the level of involvement is important as well. So if we are office bearers in a political movement or political organisation, as opposed to grassroots members, people that are members of a party but not active, or an organisation, there is a difference there. I think it's important it's identified. And I think also that any support that we get from external sources, political sources, needs to be identified. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing if it's supporting democracy, but it does need to be open, and the public do need to know about that. Obviously, with the various thresholds that we have as far as value of contributions that we'd get, in-kind, material assistance, things like that. I also think that some of the issues about the material that goes out that was touched on in the report, I think that's important, because the timing can have an impact when things go out, and I think that sense of justice at the time. But I guess also from a candidate's point of view, you do get quite, it all increases in importance at the time, and sometimes you can take things a lot more seriously than they actually are. So that's something to be aware of, and that's something that I'd say to anyone that is in the political process now or into the future. Thank you.
Your Worship, and members, I think probably one of the most important or central points in the issue of voluntary voting is that a voluntary voter has a full understanding of the worth and effectiveness of their vote. And I think you've mentioned it quite clearly in the draft letter, Your Worship, that the education process is still but young in this area. The roads, rates and rubbish idea of council still prevails quite strongly out there. And I think we actually heard a bit of that during the Rainbow Flag event, where people said, stick to their 3 hours. Not for 1 minute realising... Well, no, it wasn't in that case. well put. And the fact is that our central strategy our strategy wheel surrounds community well-being. And that community well-being is something that has enormous both length and numerous tentacles. So the more we educate our constituents, residents, voters on this element, the better for them, and of course the better for the enrichment of council, because it is likely to involve a higher quality selection process in its outcome. If we end up with a no-win in that effort and we have such a weak average voting participation of around 30%, it leaves the system open to manipulation, and we don't need to go into examples of how that might happen, but certainly we would all know that it's quite possible. Certainly also within small territories where people can become highly organised very quickly using social media or any other program. So my point is that the education process goes hand in hand with the education of the importance also of voting for local government.
I'd just like some clarification. On page 374, it talks about it's actually the letter that we're going to send off, but there's a veiled suggestion under voter participation that the City of Marion might favour compulsory voting, but would leave the reader unsure.
Quickly intercept there. My understanding is that because our letter is based on a range of views from elected members that went that went back to staff to compile, it is indeed something that would create uncertainty in the mind of the reader, because it's representing diametrically opposed views. But please, go on.
Well, I don't know whether it's been tested appropriately. We've all been asked for comment. But when it comes to the crunch, sending off a vague letter back to government is probably not in our best interest. Because it's interesting, we hear the talk about informed voting, and then we talk about 30% is not really giving a good representation. In fact, in one of our wards, it's less than that. Try 20. I think that it's high time for us as local government to stand up and say, look, if compulsory voting is good for the federal government and it's good for the state government, it should be good for us. Why do we perceive ourselves as lesser people in terms of community representation than we do the other two levels of government? And I'm not happy with this vague response. It's a waste of somebody's time to read, really.
Well, Councillor Hull, are you suggesting that it would be better to take paragraph out if there's
I would like to test the water and see that we actually put in there that the City of Marion believes that compulsory voting is the only equitable way to go forward to actually be accepted as a true level of government.
So
maybe I can move an amendment.
You're moving an amendment?
Yep. And the amendment is essentially that the City of Marion supports compulsory voting.
Well, Councillor Hull, just in terms of the letter to make it easier, if you looked at page 374, the middle of the page, members, Councillor Hull, just have a look at this. If you took out the beginning of the, before the two dot points, Council noted that compulsory voting, just left in the first dot point and deleted the second one, that would then capture your point of view, wouldn't it?
Well, it'd go some way. Would go some way.
Just an easy way of doing the amendment, that's all.
No, well, I'll take your advice on that.
Yeah. I must say, I think they've got the marketing for the voting all wrong. I think instead of all of these, this is the Mayor commenting from the Chair, I'm just waiting for a point of order.
In terms of political involvement, Mr. Mayor, I can only suggest that the heat couldn't get much stronger for me in the last election from sections of our political parties, and it's game on as far as I'm concerned. They can all take a number.
You finished, Councillor Hull? What I was going to say is I think the marketing campaign's all wrong. Rather than all this namby-pamby come-out-and-vote stuff, I think we should heavily publicise, please don't vote. Do not vote unless you're intelligent, you've read everything and you know your candidates. Stay away on polling day. But then again, that's just the other point of view. So, Councillor Hull's... We haven't moved the motion yet, have we?
Your Worship, that amendment doesn't make sense to some of us.
Okay, well...
I think Councillor Hull should just say, if he wants to support it, he supports it, rather than tinkering with those words. Just say that Council supports compulsory voting, full stop.
It's probably a fair point. So, Councillor Hull, if your amendment is to remove that whole paragraph with the two dot points and put in something else, can you give us a one-liner that sums up your view? Sure. Certainly, that is the succinctness I was after. Thank you. Right, is that amendment seconded? Well, you've had your 3 minutes, I think. And that is, you had more than your 3 minutes even with my interruption, Councillor Hull. So Councillor Gard has, hang on a minute, Councillor Gard's already spoken. Councillor Hutchinson is seconding. You're speaking to the motion or the amendment, Councillor Hutchinson? I was, but it's also your speaking opportunity if you wish. Very well. We'll put the amendment to the vote right now under the Appleby dictum. All those in favour of the amendment, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those against? 2. That's carried by majority. That certainly gives a very different flavour to the submission. We now can continue with debate. Anyone who hasn't spoken can speak to the amended motion.
Yes, just a comment that I do support the idea of compulsory voting to protect people's right to vote, and that I think is one of the most important things that it does. So it forces people, it's very difficult then in our society to stop people from voting. But I hope that the electorate doesn't misinterpret this as dictating to the voters. But that's all we're really trying to increase democracy. Thank you.
Yes, I mean, the funny thing is that Councillor Gard expressed a view about manipulation of voting if there's only a 30% turnout. There's far more manipulation that goes on with compulsory voting, because then you're appealing to people who wouldn't otherwise bother through some cheap political formula to get them to vote. It's a great way to bring party politics into local government. But there you go, the Mayor's commenting from the Chair again. Are there other speakers? If there are no other speakers, Councillor Lescu?
I think that the reason I don't support this is I don't think we've really had that discussion in depth. We provided that submission and it did have some ambiguity on our position of compulsory voting. I think we need to have that discussion to actually realise the implications of having compulsory voting. My concern is that it will take the local out of local government. The beauty, I guess the strength and weakness of local government is you get the unfiltered candidates. You get a regular person that has the opportunity to represent their community without having to have any sort of backing, political backing. Once you have compulsory voting, you're looking at a situation where you need networks to be able to staff the booths, a whole lot of things, and that's why it will then become attractive not only to political parties but to lobby groups. So I think that I don't support this position because we haven't had that discussion, and I think it's a little bit premature to come up with that position. That said, I don't think local government is any less important than the other levels of government, but I think that we need to consider our position. Either way, I will accept the view of the majority.
Well said. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by a majority. Moving along to page 381 of the agenda. Now, Councillor Appleby's leaving the meeting. Councillor Kerry's leaving the meeting. Instead of that matter. So, are there other... Is Councillor Westwood on the DAP as well? Well, there's a suggestion that there might be a conflict of interest. I'd ask Ms McKenzie to comment. Yes, I'll let you do that. Let's hear from Ms McKenzie first.
Through the Chair, this report is about the process, how to undertake the Section 270 review. The Section 270 review is based on the location of a telecommunications tower, which is subject to a DAP matter.
Okay, so it's not a code of conduct matter. It's the planning... Well, it's the process leading up to a planning decision that's under attack. Councillor Hutchinson.
Yeah, question, Your Worship. When is this going up to the DAP? Because we have just elected a new DAP.
Well... That's a riddle. Ms McKenzie?
I would have to take it on notice. I'm unsure. From some of the conversations today, there has been some queries from Telstra about when the Section 270 review would be completed, and that would guide their decision-making in regards to how they're going to progress from there, and is my understanding.
Question to Ms McKenzie, is it the case that Telstra could proceed? Well, I suppose there is nothing they can do because it has to be put up to the DAP, doesn't it? There's nothing they can do until we're ready, and presumably we're not going to do that until the 270 review is over. Ms McKenzie? Hang on a minute. Ms McKenzie, can you advise? My question first, actually. Don't worry about Councillor Crossland cutting in. My question is about when it comes back to DAP and if Telstra can do anything without us doing it.
So Telstra can progress with their appeal through the ERD court at any time, is my understanding. So in that case, that they could continue on down that path.
But that's in relation to another site.
That's in relation to another site.
But what about Kellett?
In regards to Kellett, they need to wait until we have progressed with the lease arrangements with the sports club.
So is there any prospect of this going up to the DAP before the Section 270 review is completed?
I don't believe so, no.
Right. Now, I note that future members of the Development Assessment Panel have left the room. Do we have a quorum or not? You told us it was out the other night. All right, just checking the quorum. It's seven, so we can continue. We have seven elected members present. We have, so future and current DAP members have left the room. Members, in your hands as to which way we wish to investigate the matter. Essentially, the question is either for staff or some independent outside person to review the process. Councillor Hull, to move?
Yeah, I'd like to move the motion, but the option I would pick would be the independent, option two, the independent person, and in doing so I'd like to get a bit of an idea who that person might be at this point. Reserve the right to speak.
Yes. That is something that might, where we might need to go into confidence, because it might be relating to the business affairs of potential parties. Right. What I'm hearing from staff is that we don't have any names to put forward at this time.
Well, I'll run with that. That's one and two of the motion, and option two being the way to go with part two of the motion. Members, I move this way because I have got my own concerns about the process with this. I think that it does need an independent person rather than a panel to advise us on this. Above all, I would love to know why the co-location option wasn't explored with the SA Power Network site, which is 100 metres away from this site. Which could have actually brought about a situation where two sections of our community wouldn't have been aggrieved by the suggestion of the phone tower on their back door. It wouldn't have pitted two sections of the community against each other, which was a ghastly situation. And above all, I have broader concerns about the consequences of this in terms of our integrity. The City of Marion's integrity going forward to reasonably represent the communities to oppose phone towers. Because those telcos are going to be able to quickly point out, well, the City of Marion ignored the people opposed to the phone tower because you wanted to actually take the income to enable you to put up lighting. And I think that is a very dangerous place for us to be. It's compromising us going forward. There's phone tower proposals bobbing up all around the city all the time, and there are a number of us actually opposing those. I'd urge those members, if you've had dealings with phone towers before or are contemplating those phone tower issues, you need to take this into account. It's folly for us to have gone down this track, and I'd like to see a review of our process to advise us accordingly. I think it's only with an independent person that we can get a truly independent outlook. The community could always say that a panel of council staff members predictably come out in favour of the council decision. That's always been the case with 270 reviews that I've been involved with in the past. And I think that to actually put ourselves above that, we need to have the independent person. So I urge you to consider that because I think it's the only real logical and definitive way to go forward.
Now, Councillor Hull, thank you for that. Before we go on and ask for a seconder, Councillor Hull, your motion needs clarification. And may I say that openly for the benefit of staff, that when we have a motion that says, by way of a recommendation, that council should adopt option one or option two, that there needs to be a clearly stated resolution, option one and option two, not a paragraph which sets out a permutation with all sorts of extraneous material, including cost and arguments and so on. So to make clear what you mean by option two, Councillor Hull, and given that staff don't have any suggested independent people to do the job, may I suggest to you that instead of in clause two, adopt option one or option two, that your motion might read, authorises the CEO to appoint an independent person, and then it goes on to undertake the section 270 review, etc. That suits your intent, Councillor?
Certainly sounds better, Mr. Mayor. I hope you can actually take into account that I was following the pro forma recommendation.
I've taken that into account, Councillor Hull. Is that seconded? Councillor Gard, did you wish to speak?
Yes, Your Worship. I come from a slightly different side of the affair to Councillor Hull, and not that I disagree with him in general as far as the motion is concerned, because I'm seconding it. Just to say that I was very much in support of the Cabot Reserve option, and my qualification of that was that I feel that there is much that can be done to obliterate the site of the tower to the local residents with proper and long overdue streetscaping in the area. And I have gone to the extent of examining the site metre by metre myself around the boundary to establish that view. Equally, it's important for council in an issue like this to show that it cares about the single resident as much as it cares about the collective. And it's also important, I think, that we demonstrate arm's length position by appointing an independent to investigate our processes. I think much can be gained from that as to the intent and the nature and the culture of this council and the members in it. So I do support the motion, but coming from a different angle to Councillor Hull.
Yeah, look, I've got a couple of questions, a few actually. The first question is, what, in the view of governance and the CEO, is the most transparent and accountable option of the two? And if we were to go with the option on the table, is that something that we can do as expeditiously as possible? They're the two questions, and then I do have one more, and that will be for Ms. Dixon.
Mr. Scull.
Through the Mayor, the either option one or two would be as transparent as the other, I would suggest, but from the administration point of view, my preference would be that an independent person undertakes this investigation in this instance. And whether it can be done expeditiously, not a problem at all. In fact, I think that the sooner we can get this wrapped up and the investigation concluded, the better for all.
Councillor Gillespie?
Yes, I'm just wanting to, having some involvement in the process, Ms. Dixon, would you be able to clarify the issue of the SA Power site, first of all, what the issues were there, and when that was actually provided to us in the information we received on the matter.
Dixon.
Through the Chair, and I may seek if Mr. Ballantyne wants to add any further, but my understanding was it was access to the site in terms for Telstra to actually be able to perform maintenance to it, and I'm just...
Point of order. I asked a question of relevance to this question. This is actually information that should be provided to us from the report, not tried to sort of extract it from staff member off guard tonight.
Well, there is an argument that we are setting up a review, and that sounds like it might be a question asked in the review. So
that we need to make sure that any assertions that are made by elected members, if we can clarify those as soon as possible, because there was some that was something that was considered, and the fact that we can Councillor Hull chose to bring it up, and I'm able to provide staff are able to clarify that. I think that on controversial issues, if we can provide the facts as soon as possible, he brought the issue up, we can provide some clarity. I think that's the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah,
if it hadn't been brought up,
order. Yeah, willing to give this the benefit of the doubt, let it run a bit. Ms. Dixon, anything further?
Through the Chair, I can confirm that the advice from Telstra was that that site wasn't appropriate from a technical point of view. The exact details, I can take that on notice and send that out to elected members.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? And I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So if... We'll just see what we have next, but we may want to invite... we have another 270 review, but nonetheless we should invite other members in. I understand that councillors Crossland and Byram may wish to remain out for this item due to a perceived or potential conflict of interest. So, for those members coming back in, we're on page 384, dealing with the section 270 review of the council process for the Reserve Street Dog Park. And if we're going to go ahead, then the mover can indicate whether option one or option two might be better. So Councillor Price left the room as well. Looking for a mover. Move to Councillor Hull.
Yes, I'd like to move the motion again and embed in that motion your wordsmithing, Mr. Mayor, to actually go with option two again, with the appropriate verbiage to endorse the or request the CEO take that step. Once again, for the same reasons, I think we do need to have an independent person advise us on this. I have to be probably guarded in what I say because it might reflect on another item tonight, which is a confidential item, but I do see synergy in this to a point where if there was another train of inquiry, that the two could actually share notes because there is some commonality in here. And I would actually like to see with both of those processes that there's nothing left unturned, that we are not just focusing on an elected member or two, that all parties involved are actually looked at, be it staff or any other entity that was involved in the decision-making process. That goes for both these items. I'll be saying the same thing later tonight. And because I think the community would expect that we actually do get to the bottom of any shortcomings. And that's pretty much it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Pfeiffer, did you wish to speak? Any other speakers? Councillor Valescu?
Has this any reading of this is possibly vexatious or... I don't know. I just my concern is about, and this is a question... and whether it's relevant for a 270 review, because I guess, are we creating a situation that every time council makes a decision for the broader community, that those in the community that do not like that decision will now have a 270 review, and they were looking at $5,000 to $10,000 for an independent review or staff time. Where do we draw the line? So, just some guidance as to whether this falls into a possibility of vexatious and things like that.
That's a good question. Perhaps staff could advise. And so, just before I do, I note that the only complaint that's brought to us is the simple and clear statement requesting a formal review of the process in regards to the Council's approval of the dog park enclosure at Trott Park be undertaken. So it's very general. There's nothing really specific to put a handle on with that. But be that as it may, the staff have advised it falls within the definition of a grievance. Now, the question is for Ms McKenzie, I think, as Councillor Valescu has put, is there some point at which Council can say, well, this is a grievance, but we're not going to take it any further? What are Council's choices in that regard?
Through the Chair, the conversations and the correspondence that has been received by the complainant at this point wouldn't necessarily indicate that there's anything vexatious about the complaint. What they have indicated so far is that they would like the process reviewed of how council came to their decision point to place the dog park at this location. From a transparency point of view, from a legislative point of view, there is a requirement in the Act to have a grievance procedure. Many of the grievances or complaints that we get at the moment, the Ombudsman will not look at them until Council has completed a Section 270 review on the process. I think there'd be an expectation from the Ombudsman's office that these types of reviews are completed upon request, unless it was clearly evident that they were vexatious. So a vexatious complaint may be something along the lines where you've received the complaint, the same complaint, numerous times.
Yes, so I think another way of putting it, you give the resident the benefit of the doubt if they come forward with a half-reasonable complaint, and we go through spending thousands of dollars and have a look at our process. Councillor Holt, question?
The Director to the CEO, if we didn't actually decide to do a review tonight of any description, what would be the chances out of, you know, from 1 to 10 of this going to the Ombudsman?
Mr. Scull, you want to have a go?
Through the Chair, I would say it would be very likely, and I would give it a high mark on that they would likely take advice and take it to the next level. I would like to point out that certainly we would rather not spend a lot of money in investigations than there are a lot at the moment, and the preference is to get on with the job of doing council business. There are times when you've got no choice but to actually get an independent person to do it. It doesn't mean that we need to get somebody who's going to be $400 an hour, though, and I'll be searching for somebody, perhaps even the same person, to do both of the Section 270 reviews at a rate that is reasonable, and there are some people out there who are qualified to do that at a reasonable cost.
And Councillor Hull, we have a grievance policy at present, so what we're doing is in conformity with the current policy. Councillor Blesko?
Speak on that. I'm happy by those assurances.
Are you seconding the motion?
I think it's already been seconded by Councillor.
I beg your pardon. Thank you.
That's okay, Your Worship. Look, I think that it provides the opportunity for the 270s, provide us an opportunity to see how we do things and what can be improved. And it's, whilst, you know, that if people are involved, it's not a pleasant process. But I think what we need to do is we need to learn from that so we can approach an issue in a way that can avoid this. Now, whether the merits of the decision that council makes changes in any way, we don't know. It may not. But if we can have an approach that, we can learn from that, because then if there are potential opportunities for improvement in our processes and this happens again, if we have a formula, it'll be a lot easier if we do ask for a review, because we just have some checkpoints going, okay, we've done this, we've done that. We've received advice, we've gone by what we've been guided. So if we do have to have these reviews, it'll be a lot more straightforward. And part of that, the community will be educated on that as well. So I don't want to see a situation where every time we decide on something that people don't agree with, we get one of these reviews, but I think they provide us with the opportunity to improve what we do.
Well, if it gets out of hand, we're going to have to look at the grievance procedure, because it's costing residents money. But having said that, we've got a couple on the books, and it remains to see what they'll bring to us in terms of news, and appreciate your comments, Councillor Lescott. If there are no other speakers, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. On to legal fees?
Yeah.
So we're on to councillors' motions now, and we can bring in any other elected members who are currently out of the room. Thank you. Councillor Appleby to move.
I move that motion, Your Worship. I don't think I need to add anything further.
Is that motion seconded? Councillor Hull, you wish to? Thank you. Anyone speaking against the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by a majority. Councillor, on page 389, this is more of a beat than a beat up, but Councillor Hull opens a state reserve toilet block.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a long time coming as well. It's an issue that's been around for quite a while. The South Australian Police would verify that. Indeed, I've had to take an interest in this particular issue a number of times, and in fact the first time was another toilet block just across the river, which is an extension of the Oakland Estate Reserve, where a toilet block was closed and ultimately demolished because of this sort of behaviour. I'd hate to see there be no amenity here. My motion is one of actually identifying the problem in no uncertain terms, to represent the community that have made a number of representations to me, and to actually start the ball rolling for administration to look at ways of putting in more appropriate toilet blocks, which is something SAPOL told them to do 2 or 3 years ago in a report, I believe, that was issued by the CERT Community Programs. And not only that, the irony is that it only come to light today that around about the same time there was $342,000 attributed in the budget, $358,000 in the budget around the same time to do the toilet block. Now, because of the scheduling of the master plan, it was decided not to proceed in that year, and the money was then attributed to other toilet blocks. So it missed an opportunity then. Now we've got a situation where Touched by Olivia Foundation has been moved to another precinct, and the toilet block that was going to be part of that is no longer going to be in the Oakland Estate. So that solution is gone. Now, the staff are actually coming up with suggestions to me of both short-term and long-term, one being to move the toilet block that is adjacent to the Marion Pool, literally just down the road, as a stopgap measure to replace the current toilet block, which is one of the new exolutes. Now, it's a start. The trouble is, Mr. Mayor, that the high use of this reserve, which is a district reserve, people come from not only this city to that reserve. It's high use. It deserves more than two cubicles. There's two cubicles there now and a trough. In the ladies' toilets, there might be two cubicles. I'm not sure. I've never been in there. But if you consider similar high-use areas in Holfast Bay, they've got four toilets. Now, I'm just asking the council to allow the process of budget considerations. I'm not talking about taking money from savings here tonight. I'm just asking the council to actually at least concede that there's a problem here that needs to be addressed, and to actually start engaging in the process of the budget process to actually replace this toilet. That's all I'm saying.
Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, thank you, Your Worship. Look, I guess just picking up a couple of Councillor Hull's comments and making sure they don't get misconstrued. The men liaising in the toilet block, Council's shown with their true colours as to how we feel about men liaising. We don't believe it's appropriate in public venues, though. And that's probably where this ends. The reserve is as Councillor Hull said, a regional reserve. We do get people coming from all over. The Oaklands wetlands there, it's pretty cut and dry. We don't want this sort of behaviour going on in this reserve. Just to go back to what Councillor Hull said as well about the toilet block being scheduled. In 2004 it was scheduled for replacement in 2011, and it was actually revised in 2010 when Touched by Olivia came on the scene, and obviously the toilet block was going to be demolished. So to actually leave it there in its current form in 2015 is a bit poor. I guess the community expectation was that block would be removed, and there are a large number of people in the community who know about the block, have made complaints to the police, made complaints to the councillors, and there's not really a lot that we can do about it. So in order to fulfil those expectations, the expectations which may even rival that of the Oaklands Crossing, it's important that we do something here. And one of the things that I'd like addressed is the actual location of the toilet. You know, we need to have a look at that and see whether it is suitable down behind the mound. It does offer a certain degree of seclusion, which probably is not warranted for a public toilet block. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just ask Councillor Hull, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about motions and funding things and so on. Do you have a comment to make in clarification about the cost of placing temporary toilets? Is that something we need staff advice on, or what do you say about that?
You're absolutely correct, Mr. Mayor. It was only today that Fiona Harvey rang me and went into some of that detail. There is a cost, obviously, to disconnect the toilet and move it and put footings down. She seemed to imply that the costs were not significant, but nevertheless a cost. You know, I think you're right. We do need to have a report on this. I guess inherently the motion is actually begging for a report on funding and process to actually make it happen sooner rather than later.
Application, because at the moment, presumably it doesn't cost a lot to close existing toilets, but to place temporary toilets on the reserve, presumably there would be some element of cost there. So do you know where the cost would come from?
Well, the temporary toilets could indeed be the X or Lose being moved from that upper reserve. I'm open to suggestions from the administration. There's nothing in the comments that would help us with that. Admittedly, to be fair to the staff, information is coming to hand even today. So, you know, even if a report comes back to the next council meeting to advise us, that would get the ball rolling.
Well, Councillor Hull, the motion is for temporary toilets to be moved there now.
Which could be the ones from Hendry Street, as an example, although...
No, sorry, we're going around in circles a bit. I think I must turn to staff and just ask about the financial implications, either Ms. Harvey or Mr. Mifsud. Can you just explain, if council directs that temporary toilets are to be made available in the Oaklands Estate Reserve, where would the funds come from to do that?
Through the chair. So Councillor Hull's correct. Staff have started to pull through the costings for various options, and one option could potentially be that one of the exolus at the Hendry Street Reserve be relocated to Oaklands Reserve. That would come at a cost of $58,850. There is no funds allocated to this work. Through discussion, if council were wishing to approve those funds, then it would be appropriate that that come from the Asset Sustainability Reserve. The other option is we can bring a report back to council detailing the options for consideration as well, and that could be brought back at the next council meeting.
Well, I just think that with the practice that we are developing and trying to apply continually of attaching a funding line to any new initiative, that perhaps the motion needs to incorporate something, whether it's using the Asset Sustainability Reserve or whatever. But you're really inviting amendment unless it's incorporated as part of the motion. So, Councillor Hull, I'm giving you the opportunity. We might need leave of the meeting for you to address that issue.
Well, Mr. Mayor, to be honest with you, the alternative toilets were basically those ones you'd see on a building site for a major event.
I understand that. That's what the motion says at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there's a cost.
What is the cost of hiring that sort of toilet until we can actually... Because people aren't using these toilets now.
That was the question I asked, but I didn't really get an answer to that.
Through the chair.
Ms. Dixon?
So the cost for a temporary toilet is $700 per month.
Right.
And there's... Yep. So there's
a funding source?
So in terms of the to put temporary toilets in, the cost would be $19,910.
Sorry, I thought you just said $700 a month.
Yep, but there's also costs in terms of delivery, pickup, ramp would need to be installed as well. So that's the total cost.
Right, and the funding source that you recommend?
Again, through that, it would be through the Asset Sustainability Reserve.
Well, Councillor Hull, just so that this doesn't become an issue later in the debate, do you want to add to the motion that the Asset Sustainability Fund be used to make... after the word that.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm willing to run with this because, Mr. Mayor, the people aren't using the toilets now because they're fearful to go in there. They don't want to be confronted by what I got confronted with the other day. So, put in some of these special function toilets.
Sorry, I meant, if I can just interrupt Councillor Hull. Really, I was thinking that in the second line there, before the word temporary, because the cost is not in closing, presumably, but rather using or rather putting in. That's it. Now, do I have leave of the seconder to include that wording? Oh, yes.
It's just about the public toilet renewal program. Is that still active, that program?
Ms. Dixon? So, can I... Is there nothing in this year's budget for improvement to any public toilet in the City of Marion. Minister?
Through the Chair, I don't believe there is in this current year budget. The toilet replacement program was pretty well concluded across the City of Marion a year or two ago, and therefore all the funding, other than the item that's been referred to here, as Councillor Hull's quite correctly said, the funding that was previously set aside for this particular reserve a few years back was used to renew, if you like, other toilets across the City of Marion.
Thank you. So, you're happy for the wording suggested to be included in the motion, Councillor Pryor?
As good as it gets, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Gets the job done. Do I have leave of the meeting for the motion to be amended, for the motion to be moved in that way? There are no objections. There are objections. Well, then I'll put that to a vote. Councillor Hull, you're moving that you have leave to incorporate those words into the motion. I'll take that as a procedural motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by a majority. There is leave of the meeting for the reference to the Asset Sustainability Reserve to be incorporated into the wording of the motion. It's now been moved and seconded, and it's now open to others for debate. Councillor Boyce.
I think trying to stop that sort of behaviour is the way to go. And I think, I guess there's two goals I see that Councillor Hull and Councillor Pryor want to achieve. They want to update to more contemporary and appropriate toilet facilities in that area, and they are needed in the area because it's a stop-off point where people have their picnics and things like that. And the second issue is discouraging inappropriate behaviour in that place. And I think those two issues are separate. For example, one concern about his motion having the temporary toilets is that that area will attract vandalism. Those toilets will be, temporary toilets will be vandalised. So that's why I'm not supporting having temporary toilets there. My other concern is that even if we replace the toilets, there's other measures we need to take to discourage antisocial behaviour, because when it gets dark, the antisocial behaviour may not stop. It may move from the location of the toilets to the vehicles that will park hidden away. So there's some deceptive issues that we need to look at. And thirdly, and most importantly, I think that this is something that needs to be part of the budget process. It's something that I would be happy to accelerate, to put funding towards, because there could be a couple of options. First of all, if we do have an option for Touch by Olivia, that we may need to adjust the toilets at Henry Reserve to a point where we can't use the current ones and they're moved over. Or it may be that the timing doesn't suit, all those toilets can be moved somewhere else. When Touch by Olivia gets underway and we put appropriate toilets there. My concern is that we won't address all the issues that the councillors have correctly identified, but also we're not going through the right process and it's a little bit on the run. Closing those toilets immediately will cause problems for legitimate users, and I think that the temporary toilets will be vandalised, having some knowledge of the area. So I think we should proceed with caution on this one to get the best outcome, because we're going to be possibly wasting money and not getting what we want out of it. So I would prefer that the councillors maybe come back, we discuss this a little bit further, or it's put through the budget process and not vote for it on the hop.
I just had a question, Your Worship. It's in relation to the fact that we can close them immediately, and is there any feedback from staff on that, whether that's feasible?
Through the Chair, you could close the existing toilets immediately by placing locks and signage and putting that in. I don't have the information in how quickly we could get temporary toilets on site as well. I don't have that at hand.
Okay, anything else, Councillor Hutchinson? Any other speakers for or against, Councillor Crossman?
Yeah, I would like to ask the mover and seconder to amend their own motion. I support their sentiments. I believe we are doing this again on the run without all the information. Closing the toilets and putting temporary there isn't going to solve the problem. By the sound of it, they actually don't want two tiny toilets there moved from one site to another. Because what you're looking for is toilets actually built and designed for that area, for that purpose. And I think spending $1,700 or whatever it is, $17,000 on temporary toilets and then $58,000 on moving toilets, which are still not suitable, is not the way to go. I would rather you get a design that is brought back to us in a location that meets all the SEPTED principles and we build a proper toilet. And if that's going to cost $180,000, then I would rather spend that than spend $19,000 plus $58,000 plus we've still got a problem, can we start again? And I think you should ask for that report to come back to the next council meeting and deal with it as an urgent matter.
Councillor Hull?
Mr Mayor, I welcome that comment. I'm chuffed that there seems to be an understanding around the place and goodwill about this, and I seek your guidance now as to how we might be able to take this forward with the appropriate report back to us to do it properly.
Well, it may not be the most politically expedient, but a simple means would be to withdraw the motion on the understanding that a report comes back to the next meeting. But in the meantime, Councillor Hull, that you would reformulate in a way that would achieve the desired objective. I think one of the problems that elected members might perceive with the motion is that although the problem is recognised, it seems, the urgency of implementation is not necessarily appreciated. So Councillor Crossland's point was that if we're going to fix this, let's fix it by identifying an XLU that we can move down there, find the best spot to put it, put that in place, get the plumbing done, then knock down the old block. I mean, that might be seen as a more logical, popular means. And at the same time, you've got the political benefit, Councillor Hull, of going to the community saying, look, we've discussed this, we've thrashed it out, may have to wait a bit longer, but we're going to fix it. We're going to fix it in a better way than having a slapdash solution.
I having heard what you just said, I withdraw the motion on the basis that it will come back to the next council meeting and give staff a bit of time instead of trying to advise me on the hop as well. And we'll try and do this properly. After all, if we have to wait another month or two, it's 4 years overdue already.
Thank you. And if I can offer some gratuitous advice from the Chair this time. If any other member have any suggestions, constructive suggestions that might help Councillor Hull formulate a motion to achieve the objective, please contact him, email him in the next few days while you're still thinking about it, because we don't want to lead Councillor Hull up the garden path. We're accepting that there's a problem we want fixed here. When the motion comes back next time, I'd expect it to be one where the objections have been thrashed out in informal discussions and we can come back with a solution. My sense is that there's not an objection to council spending the money to get the job done properly. At some point there need to be proper new toilets put in that reserve. It was going to happen if it wasn't for the Olivia proposal being diverted. So that's probably the way to go. So thank you, Councillor Hull. The motion's withdrawn. We can go on to the next item of business. Councillor Westwood.
Just very briefly, I imagine a motion could be suggested at the end of that report that will be coming.
Oh, yes, it'll be motion and report. Thank you. We now go into the confidential items. And I don't think there'll be any argument from anybody about the need for confidential debate on this matter, because it refers to disposal of property. Councillor Pryor's declared a possible or perceived conflict of interest. But as for the rest of us, we're waiting for someone to move a confidentiality motion. Move to Councillor Crossland. Second, Councillor Pfeiffer. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried unanimously.